Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events on this very fine day of Thursday, December 5th, 2013. A couple of reports came out today. We'll be getting to those after the break today. Let's first go ahead and do the market reports. We have gold. There's gold in those hills. Down 1680. They actually had it back. It came back a long way. It was down, you know, 22, 24, 25 bucks today. And they had it as high as 1237, recovered there. And she pulled back slightly, down 16 at 1227. Silver, same thing. Down 30 at 1952. Platinum was down $8 today at 1366. And the winner of the day was palladium, up 8 at $739. The USDX today was down again, down 3.4 at 80.28. And crude oil today was up a little bit, 0.30 at 97.50. Paper markets today. I really hope the Fed would just taper just to get this done and over with.
Yeah, I understand.
Stocks and lower amid concerns over Fed stimulus ending in the wake of good economic data. Well, once we tear apart that good economic data, we'll be telling you that there won't be any pullback in the stimulus. If they pull it back on the stimulus, it's not going to be in the bond buying part. It's going to be in the mortgage section. But yeah, the Dow down 68 points at 15,821. And the NASDAQ down 4 at 4,033. The S&P down 7 at 1785. And the 10-year, come on, get over that 3%. 2.86 today on the 10-year yield. 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. Folks, give us a call here at Discount Gold and Silver. You know, our pricing, you just can't beat it. I mean, our prices are 98% lower than what you can find online.
Plus, no, that's not true.
That is true.
That would mean if you're selling, no, you're mistaken on that. 98% lower? That can't be.
Of the time, 98% of the time we are lower.
98% of the time. You said the prices are 98% lower. I guarantee you, I'll be buying more gold from you myself. I'm already buying, but I would borrow money if I could buy gold at 98% lower than what I can find on the rest of the internet.
98%, if not 100%.
I would rob banks. I'd go out and be robbing a bank. I'd hang up right now, go out to hold up a bank to get the money. 98% lower.
But 98%.
That's a heck of a Christmas deal, but I don't think that's real.
All right, enough, Al. 98% of the time, we are lower than what on the buyers online. Plus, we provide privacy. How private do you think it is buying online? And, I mean, we advertise and we run these programs to a group of people who require privacy, who look for privacy, and yet they buy things online, and it just baffles me. But give us a call at 800-375-4188. Let's get started right away. We have Wendy Wilson joining us today, and from thepowerherbs.com, thepowerherbs.com. And, of course, you can always give her a call at 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. Give her a call and ask for a free product catalog. And she's got all kinds of discounts running on her product, and she's here to talk about her product today. Wendy Wilson.
Hello, Melody. How you doing? How you doing, Al?
Hi. How you doing, Wendy?
I'm doing good. You guys have a good Thanksgiving?
Yes, as good as I deserved. I didn't even get fat from it.
Well, good.
I'm sorry. Anyway, what you got for us today, Wendy?
Well, we've got a new age of stress, apparently, Melody, Al. The baby boomers, they used to be the high-stress demographic, you know, in the United States. But now the young adults of America are quickly bringing up the rear and actually will be surpassing, if not already, the stress levels of their parents and grandparents. So, and as you know, stress can be a breeding ground for physical and psychological problems, like, you know, lowers your immune system, creates sleep deprivation, depression, and even anxiety. So guess what the media has done? They have this new catchphrase for our modern era of stress, and they're calling it millennial stress. Have you heard this term?
No, I haven't, but, you know, it's speaking to a different generation. My generation doesn't pay any attention to the millennials except perhaps trying to encourage them to pay our debts.
Gotcha. Well, actually, the age group which seems to be most affected by the millennial stress, as it is, are the ages of 18 to 33. Now, this age group is called the millennials, which seem to be the most anxious and the most depressed. Now, how do you suppose we're coping with this millennial stress? You got any ideas, Al?
White lightning?
Well, you're close. For the most part, you know, each of the generations, whether you're talking about young adults ages 18 to 33, also known as the millennials, well, they are saying that the way that they are coping with stress in order of prevalence is they listen to music, they spend time with family or friends, they play video games, or they surf the internet, and sometimes they just eat something. Now, the Generation Xers are the people in the age group of 34 to 47. They cope pretty much the same way, except their order's off a little bit. They listen to music, they spend time with family and friends, they play video games and surf the internet, and they eat as well. And the baby boomers, pretty much ages 48 to 66, are in that same category as the Generation Xers on how they're typically handling this new millennial stress. So what this means is basically our youngest generation is going to be most likely to be diagnosed with a mental disorder brought about by extreme stress or this constant stress. So according to the American Psychological Association, there's this 10-point scale, Al, Melanie, where you can measure the millennial stress. Of course, one being the lowest amount of stress you're exposed to and 10 being, you know, the extreme stress area. So now a year ago, they're saying that the average score was a 4.9, But the age group falling into the millennials, they now have an average score of an 8. And there's this marketing researcher, Mike Hyas of Arcadia, California. He's also the author of the Millennial Momentum book. He says the people that are in the age group of the millennials, they don't know where they're going in life, and this is adding to their stress level. And they are the most pampered generation, and they have the highest expectations while they're growing up in this tough economy. And there's about 1.7 million of them that are unemployed, which accounts for about 13% of their age group. Now, the ones that are employed are the ones that went through school, but now they have $150,000 to a $250,000 student loan on their back, and they have no choice but to continue to live with family, and they kind of feel stuck. They can't move forward. So we've got problems with stress. And do you know what the medical, the allopathic medicine, you know what their answer to this is?
No, I can't say that I do.
Okay. Well, the standard answer to this problem from the medical field is that they say there's more mental health services and drugs available to the millennials than past generations. Of course,
didn't they get enough Ritalin when they were kids? Is that what the problem is? Didn't government didn't hand out enough Ritalin when they were in grade school?
Yeah, right up there with the animal crackers, right? Well, a scientific research has shown that your antidepressants can actually magnify anxiety and sleep disorders, along with a slew of other side effects, including heart disease and suicide. But according to Ronald Kistler, he's a Harvard Medical School in Boston, he says they really don't know why the young people are so stressed out today. He says he doesn't really seem to think that there's any outstanding stimuli to indicate that this is anything to really worry about, since he explains anxiety and depression tend to subside as people get older. Well, obviously,
I would agree with him. I would tend to agree with him from this perspective. I can see that the millennial generation has more problems than we faced when I was in my 20s, for example. It's tougher getting a job. Some of them have to live at home. I'm sure I'm sure many of them are thinking, you know, if I knew that I'd have to live at home after I took out all that money to go to college, I think I'd just taken the money and moved to the islands or something like that. They're probably rethinking their whole college education. But my own experience, and I think most people's, is that the 20s are always the toughest decade of your life. You're no longer being taken care of in the same sense that you were when you were living at home with your parents, typically. All right? You're on your own. You're trying to make things make sense of the world and trying to find your way and the rest of that. For me, the 20s were my most difficult decade. After you got 30, things started to level out and things became, okay, I think I get it. I can handle what's going on here. It's not confusing and the rest. So the point I'm trying to make is if I were looking at this research, I'd say that any generation in their 20s is thus when they're going to have their maximum stress on average. And the millennial generation just happens to be walking into a decade where we've got a bunch of additional economic and financial stress. So it's a little more, they're getting a bigger dose of it than perhaps I did when I was in my 20s. But there's a certain amount of this is just normal to my mind.
Well, yeah, but, you know, the millennials actually coping with the stress in more sedentary ways, like eating and playing video games. 59% of them do that. So this actually can contribute to weight gain and diabetes and compound their depression. So there's a double-edged sword there, whereas in your generation, Al, you probably didn't have a lot of those distractions where you could just sit home and be entertained. You actually went out and did some things.
We went out to the bars. We didn't sit home to be entertained. We went out to the bars and, you know, got our entertainment the way all Americans did out there at Budweiser and rock and roll and that sort of thing.
Right. Well, at least you were moving around and, burning off some calories. Now, the millennials are going to be the most stressed and anxious generation to date. And there's some other things that could be contributing to this. Research from Stony Brook University and the University of Pittsburgh have linked these mental illnesses of depression and anxiety to a lot of electronic media. So So the study that was coming out of the University of Pittsburgh showed that men were more depressed than women because they tend to mull over the negative experiences more. Now, are computers and cell phones to blame? No, but technology is contributing, but it's the operator's fault if they're not controlling the use of the technology. So, in other words, if you have 500 friends on Facebook and 500 TV channels, and at the push of a button, you can expose yourself to things like bullying, stalking, character defamation, and shallow and immoral examples of behavior, well, then, yeah, it's going to have a definite negative impact on people.
I think it has a negative impact just because the more time you spend with your technology, the less time you spend acting physically. And I know for myself, I was always more relaxed, more confident. Life was always easier when I was engaged in physical activity.
Mm-hmm.
When you sit on your butt, you don't burn off the excess energy that our bodies tend to produce, especially when you're younger. You got to get out there and, you know, kick the football or play basketball or work physically. You've got to do something. You can't easily just sit on your butt. You need physical activity, and if you don't get it, there's going to be a price to be paid. I mean, it kicks in the endorphins. I can remember reading that when you are engaged in physical activity, it increases the production of endorphins in your body. If I recall correctly, I believe that's correct. You correct me if you know better, but there's the technology just puts us in place. We don't move. We don't have to, you know. Without that electronic technology, if we want something,
right,
we have to go get it. With the electronic technology, a lot of our needs are satisfied just sitting in one place.
Well, you know, the next
step up is to get a phone that'll deliver a hamburger.
Right.
Okay.
Well, the generation
just sit there and get us, and somehow we'll have a 3D printer that's built into your cell phone that'll print a hamburger whenever you're hungry. You won't even have to get up to go to the open the refrigerator. I'm exaggerating, but the point is you have to have some physical activity. We're physical beings.
Absolutely. And, you know, who knows, you may have drones now deliver your McDonald's. You don't even have to go to the drive-thru, right? So the generation that's able to control or limit their exposure to technology actually, Al, has the lowest stress level, and those are the baby boomers. And another interesting fact, instead of, you know, drowning ourselves in video games, food, or alcohol, in a weak attempt to cope with anxiety and depression, there's this study by Dr. Randolph Bird that shocked the medical and scientific community when he released his research from San Francisco Hospital on the power of prayer to improve health, especially in the areas of depression and anxiety. There's been some other studies on that. Duke University did one in 2005, and also there was a report on this in the 2009 Journal of Clinical Nursing. So, it apparently, the people at Beliefs.net said that if you're depressed, you can find a lot of hope and comfort reading the Book of Psalms. So it's amazing how stress can be lifted off your body when you just, you know, have a close relationship with the Creator.
Well, there's another point to this also. You are at least implying that there's a chance that the millennial generation that is currently going through so much stress may find themselves sliding, kicking, and screaming back to God to alleviate their stress. It may be that this is the beginning of a kind of spiritual revival, that, and the millennial generation may wind up being the tip of the spear for a religious revival, although we might not see it for another decade. I don't know why I'm not predicting that it's going to happen right now, but who knows? That's at least a possibility. We've got about 45 seconds left. Wendy, why don't you give us some contact information? And
absolutely. Besides prayer, God said herbs are here for the service of man in Psalms 104. So you can check it for yourself. Of course, you know there's some herbs that can help you calm down the central nervous system so you're not so anxious or depressed. And there's some things like herbs that help you sleep, so you don't have to resort to all those drugs. So you can give the folks at Apothecary Herbs a call. Their toll-free number is 866-229-3663, 866-229-3663. Or you can just visit their website, thepowerherbs.com, thepowerherbs.com. That's where your healthcare options just became endless.
Thank you, Wendy. We look forward to talking to you again next Thursday. Have a good week.
Thank you, Al. Thanks, Melanie.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. I'm Alfred Addis, here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. We'll be back in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Financial obligations or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
I just want to remind the folks we're going to continue this special until we know that you'll be able to receive it before December 25th, and that is the 1/10 ounce Gold Eagle coin along with the Mint State 64 Morgan Silver Dollar. And folks, if you want to replace that Morgan Silver Dollar with a Silver Eagle, you can do that too. We've done that for a couple of our folks. So, but you got to call us at 800-375-4188. And if you have any questions for today's program, you can direct them to questions@dgscoins.com. questions@dgscoins.com. And make sure you guys get to the website dgscoins.com and sign up for the weekly newsletter. And of course, the archives are there. But you have to pick up that phone and you have to go online. We've got some great prices, great shipping. And next week, we're going to be giving, well, maybe we'll start tomorrow. We've got some beautiful mint state $20 gold pieces coming in. And I picked up a batch of them, and I want to see what they look like first before we start issuing them along with the free silver eagle. So that'll be coming up soon, and we'll get those priced. But beautiful, from what I've been told, they've been absolutely beautiful. So we'll probably start that next week. We talked when we came on today how the GDP was revised up today. It showed that the third quarter...
Now, when you say GDP, you mean gross domestic product, right?
That is correct.
I was trying to, otherwise you do that GD thing, and sometimes that's, there's a misunderstanding about what that might mean. Go ahead. Well, gross domestic product.
I think most of them get it, but...
I know, but it's just one of those things that...
The GDP was revised up 3.6%. Well, actually, it wasn't revised. That was the third quarter. And it always amazes me. You have all these economists out who've gone to all kinds of colleges and so forth, and they continue to say much stronger than expected. So what are these economists missing that they can't even get close? But if you take a look at the number, I don't think it's as good as it looks. But you're not going to hear that on mainstream media. One of the reasons that it looked stronger was because businesses are stockpiling larger inventories. So if you have that inventory boost, if you took that out, the growth would have been just 1.9%.
Well, what it means is there will be a correction in the next month, the next quarter, whatever time frame they use, when they have produced that inventory and they're producing more inventory than they're selling. And it just means that they won't produce inventory in the next time segment until they have sold the inventory they've already got. That's the implication. So we'll see another,
But it's saying,
it implies that another decline is coming.
Absolutely. I mean, the point is they're increasing their inventories, probably with the hope that they're looking forward to the holiday seasons and thinking that they're going to eliminate a lot of that inventories. But it doesn't seem that that's what is happening. So therefore, all their increasing of their inventories, their stockpiling, is another way to disprove these numbers are not accurate. But all
they're misleading.
They're misleading.
You know, it's like,
all
that's
you
the
will
problem
hear on mainstream media is, oh, the economy is growing at 3.6%.
Yeah.
And, of course, another indication is that demand is weaker than expected, which I just mentioned, and that the goods are lingering on the shelves longer than planned as a result. Consumer spending, for example, grew at a slower pace in the third quarter than originally reported. And so that's where that is at. They are expecting the fourth quarter GDP numbers to be weaker. And as you mentioned earlier, Al, mm-hmm. as inventories are unlikely to contribute to growth in the next quarter. So, you know.
They'll cut production is what will happen until mm-hmm. the inventories are consumed,
exactly.
Which means bum, bum, bum.
Exactly.
It levels out over time. And one of the lessons in all this, you can't just pay attention to what it is right this minute.
Headline news.
You got to take a longer view if you want to understand what's happening. And that goes back to fundamentals, and it also goes back to things like gold. You're doing this, if you're buying gold, you're taking the long view.
You know, Al, yesterday we talked about the Fed's beige book. They reported yesterday that the government shutdown in October really didn't have an impact on the economy. However, they're already using that as the fourth quarter drop in numbers will be impacted by the government shutdown in October. So, doesn't anybody see this? And doesn't anybody ever question? And it's just...
And the answer is apparently no.
Not, apparently.
That's why the government gets away with doing this again and again and again. And you'd think that enough resistance would show up where people would say, look, stop lying to us. But not enough people are saying it, and therefore the government says it works. The people buy the lies, so let's give them what they buy. You know?
Another report, the jobless benefits last week fell as 298,000 people filed of their first week of unemployment insurance. You got to remember last week was Thanksgiving, so there was a day that the offices were closed, and that was the lowest number since September. And, of course, everyone is waiting for tomorrow's the government's key monthly jobs report that comes out tomorrow. And, of course, they're looking for the unemployment rate to fall to 7.2% in November. And they spent, a full segment 20 minutes on CNBC today talking about how they gather those numbers and, you know, the protocols that are set in place to ensure that the numbers aren't manipulated for any
poll. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, how they gather the numbers. That's got to be, boy, I can hear the people in the Bureau of Labor Statistics laugh. They're sitting there and laughing. How do we gather the numbers? Hand me the darts, Melody. Let me throw them at the target. Oh, we got a one. Okay, that's one of the numbers.
I know.
How they gather the numbers.
Yes.
Oh, my God. They were
just talking about there's absolutely no way they would be able to do it if, you know, because they have these supervisors that will scan these reports and if anything. Yeah, I know. I know.
Yeah, especially the supervisor Obama. He's going to scan the reports also.
I know. And they're sitting here when they had a table. They had this panel of probably five or six people. And, I mean, they're just sitting there. And, of course, they brought up Jack Walsh and, you know, his first comments when the unemployment rate dropped, you know, huge right before the election. And but it is just so setting it up for tomorrow.
Who did you say was on what panel were you watching? CNN? Is that what you were saying?
No, CNBC this morning.
CNBC. Are you sure it wasn't Saturday Night Live?
Yeah.
I mean, this almost sounds like, oh, my gosh, these people are shameless. Good God. Oh. Yeah.
But the economy is doing so well. President Obama came out today, and he's pushing Congress to extend the federal unemployment benefits for another year.
Mm-hmm.
And our good old Republicans say, yeah, we'll probably do that. We're willing to consider the idea anyway, but the benefits for 1.3 million workers expire at the end of this month if Congress doesn't extend a recession-era program by the end. And what's interesting is, you know, Obama is saying what I find interesting, and he's talking about how can the Congress allow these people to go into poverty right before Christmas. And my comment is, if these people are unemployed and they can't get jobs for the length of time that they've been off work, they're already in poverty.
True.
And it's Obama and Washington and all these trade agreements. That's what's pushing them into
poverty. Yeah, I understand. They want us. How long can this continue? Recognizing that at least part of the cause is our beloved government shipped a bunch of our industries and jobs overseas. Part of the reason these people can't find jobs is because the government created, they diminished our tariffs, they committed us to global free trade, and in doing so, they have gutted the industrial base of the United States, or at least damaged it. I don't think gutted is a fair term, but they've impaired it considerably, and they've eliminated many of our jobs. Now what are they going to do? How are they going to compensate for that? And for the moment, what they're saying, well, we'll just extend unemployment, that's all. And when that employment, when that comes to an end, we'll extend it again, and we'll make it larger. And it's going to get to a point where 10% of the people in this country are going to have jobs, and the other 90% are going to be living on unemployment until someone finally faces up the fact we got to get the industries back in this country. The government can't make jobs appear without more industry. What are we going to do? We're going to do more service work? Huh? Can we flip more hamburgers, paint more fingernails? How many more people can be cosmetologists? Somebody's got to get a job that produces something, and that means industry has to be brought back, and that means, one, you raise your tariffs, and two, you get government off your back by reducing the number of regulations that are being applied.
You know, another thing about what the White House is talking about these unemployment benefits, they really don't care about the people not having a job and not working. They really don't care. They would do the things, just as you mentioned, in order to bring the jobs back. And what they care about, because if these benefits expire, the Congressional Budget Office and a J.P. Morgan economist said that the GDP could fall next year by 0.2 to 0.4 of a percentage point. That's what they care about, are these numbers. And if you're already at 1.9%, I mean, It's that's what they care about. They care about the
I don't
numbers.
Think they care about anything but re-election, and the only reason they care about that is to see how much
but
more money they can get out of the special
but
interest.
If they keep that GDP up there a little bit stronger, it'll be a lot easier for them to get elected next year, along with being kind.
If they can
and
keep the illusion of it.
That's it.
Yeah. And how do they maintain the illusion?
Part
by
of the
going
illusion?
Deeper into debt.
It, by right. One way of extending the benefits.
Where's the money coming from for the benefits?
I mean, if I was on unemployment and I had a choice to vote for somebody that I knew that would probably extend my benefits, who do you think I'd vote for? What do you think most of the people, well, I wouldn't,
I
but who do you think most of the people would vote for?
And
so they're buying them off.
That's exactly right. And it's not just a question of the government is buying the people off.
Not all.
The people are allowing themselves to be bought off.
Yeah.
And they're doing so at great personal peril. When you accept the mind, you accept that mentality, that mindset, that you are entitled to sit on your butt and do nothing, and somebody else is going to just, we'll just tax somebody else and they'll put the money in your pocket. You get into that, you get comfortable with that mindset, and you're going to reach a point where you are incapable of working unless you go through an almost traumatic period where you say, oh my gosh, I can't count on government. I can't count on other people to support me. I actually have to do my own work. You get to that. If you don't get to it, you're going to starve to death. And if you do get to it, you're going to get there by means of trauma. You put yourself in peril by taking the government's money. A lot of it's almost impossible to resist. Government comes along and makes you an offer you can't refuse. They say, look, we're going to give you some free money. And everybody sits back. It's just human nature to take it.
And I'm not even sure, Al, how many of the people really understand what is happening.
No, I agree with you.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I don't think they understand what's happening, but they likewise don't understand the consequences to themselves. The average person thinks, well, what's wrong with taking a little free money? You know? And it's
they do it.
It's
yeah.
it is the same mindset you find in young women or boys or whoever that begin to engage in prostitution. Where's the harm in taking a little money? We're just having fun, you know, what's wrong with that? Watch and see. You will regret that prostitution. You understand? You might not regret it the first year, but the day is going to come, you're going to say, oh, my God, what have I done to my life? And it won't be easily escaped. If at all possible, you got to find a way to support yourself. If that means you have to live on next to nothing, you got to find yourself just a little room to stay in. Fine, stay in the room. But live on the money you make. Don't take that money from government. I know more. I know that'll fall on deaf ears, and very few people will agree with what I've just said. Well, yeah, how could I be hurt by taking the money? You'll see. You will see. You live long enough, you'll see. You know, you can look at, there are, we talk about people who've become institutionalized in terms of welfare. We have generations of people in places that mom was on, grandma was on welfare, mom's on welfare, the kids are, it's a way of life. They don't have the culture, the cultural values to go back and actually work for something. It's, they've lost that part of the culture, and it won't be easily regained. You're not going to teach old welfare recipients new tricks. You understand? If you want to keep your mind open where you can learn new technologies and, you know, new jobs, and you've got to keep working. You've got to do it. And you owe it to yourself to do so, if at all possible. I know we all have difficult times at times. Boy, you got to get around it as quickly as possible. You must learn to be self-reliant. Got about a minute and 20 left. Melody, what do you want?
What do I want?
Here, I got a warning.
I've
got a warning for people.
What?
Got this on the internet today. Now, you know, so I want you to all pay close attention. Warning, warning. You understand? It's reported that there are over 700 fake Obamacare websites out there stealing your personal information. Okay? So you got to be careful when you sign up for Obamacare. You might be on a fake website that's just capturing your Social Security number and the rest of the information so they can raid your bank account. Got to be careful. So remember, when you sign on, the real Obama website, Obamacare website, is the one that does not work. Okay? If you get to an Obamacare website and it signs up and it's no problem, they're stealing your information. There's my warning du jour, Melody.
Wow.
Well,
sounds pretty good.
Yeah, it does.
I actually got a voice recording from my insurance company that canceled me, telling me to reminding me that they canceled me.
Did they ever answer the question?
No, they didn't. Not surprised.
All right, we're at time for a break, so let's do it. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody C. The Sermon Financial Survival. Be right back. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click satellite system.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis, and this is Financial Survival. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. We've got an article here from Zero Hedge. Tyler Durden wrote it, and we'll make a few comments on it. The headline is, Gold Drops Below Cash Cost Approaches Marginal Production Costs. Yes?
Can I just say one thing before you do that? I don't mean to interrupt what you're going to talk about is important.
You'll be forgiven.
But you were talking about the Obamacare right before the break, and yep. Today a mass email was sent to all of the Senate staff telling them that the DC HealthLink website crashed, and they have to actually sign up for Obamacare through the Washington, D.C. exchange. And I'll really tell you what that's all about because of what you just said. Yeah. How many? There's so many fake ones. They're protecting these guys.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, they're protecting the congressional staffers. They opened up their own little exchange for those guys, you know, so they'll be protected and everything else. And, you know, they won't have any problems. And because they're special.
They're special. Yeah, exactly. Here's the article we're going to talk about, though. It's gold drops below cash cost, approaches marginal production cost. Marginal cost of production of gold in 2013 was estimated at between $1,250 and $1,300. What that means is that as of a few days ago, gold is now trading well below not only the cash cost, but is rapidly approaching the marginal cash cost of $1,125. I don't believe it's going down that far, but where we're going with this is this. We're right now looking at the price of gold is in many instances approaching the cost of production, the cost of mining it out of the ground, and falling below that for some mines. Some mines, the cost of production is actually higher than the current cost of gold. In other words, it might be costing them $1,300 an ounce to produce the gold, and they're only able to sell it for $1,200 an ounce. They're losing money. And it means that inevitably some of the mines are going to close down, and they will continue to stay closed until we finally have a shortage in physical gold that's recognized by everyone and the price begins to rise and rise dramatically. That's what is implied by these low prices. Beyond that, the implication is that the prices are already so low that they're not likely to go much lower. When the price of any product begins to approach its production price, you know, there are exceptions, but it's unlikely that the price can go much lower. Right? I'm not saying it won't, but it certainly won't be sustained. There has to be money to be made in this or it disappears, and gold can't disappear. The market can't just collapse where people say, oh, I don't want gold anymore. No, people are always going to want gold. And the implication is if price can't go much lower and nothing stays stable for any length of time in terms of prices, then the strong implication is that gold is due for an upswing, and it could be starting, who knows, first quarter next year. We'll watch and see how soon this can take place. But we are establishing a bottom. Gold can't reasonably be sold for less than it costs to produce gold, and we're down close to that level at this time. So, what else do we have? What else do we have, Melody?
The Feds now own about one-third of the entire U.S. bond market.
Yeah, that's fun. That's one of the things that just amuses me. All right, this also is by ZeroHedge.com. They're the ones that started it. An article in our commentary is attached. The most important chart that nobody at the Fed seems to pay any attention to, and certainly none of the economists who urge the Fed to accelerate its monetization of Treasury paper, they've got it below. It shows that the Fed's total holdings of the entire bond market indicates that the Fed may soon own, matter of fact, already owns almost a third of all the bonds. U.S. Treasury bonds. They are complaining in the article, says, thus the amount of securities that the Feds can buy without crushing the liquidity in the deepest bond market in the world, that's U.S. bonds, is rapidly declining. And what do they mean by liquidity? They mean the ability to quickly sell a product or investment on the free market at a price that's mutually agreed to by the buyer and the seller. For example, if I went down to buy an automobile from the local Cadillac dealer. Before I go, I can look on the internet and I can get the price and I can say, okay, this car is going to cost me $50,000. All right, maybe I'm going to go for $50,000. I know that's the price and I can find that price on the internet. I go down there and if the Cadillac dealer, no, this is a $70,000 car. I'm going to go say what? I might go, if he says, no, it's a $51,000 or $52,000 or $53,000 car, well, I don't know. I might go along with it. Likewise, he might go along with it if I said the car's only worth $47,000. I can give you $47,000, but I can't do $50,000. He might go along with that. There's room for negotiation, but we walk in knowing that the car is somewhere close to $50,000. And insofar as we know that up front, he knows he can sell it at $50,000. I know he's going to want $50,000. We have a certain amount of liquidity. But if I walk in expecting to see a $50,000 car and I get a $70,000 price, it's going to be, we aren't going to have there's no liquidity there because we cannot agree on price. I'm not going to buy. Likewise, if the dealer says he's got a $50,000 car and I'm only offering him $35,000, he's going to say, all right, he's not going to go. To have liquidity, we've got to understand what the prices are. We've got to agree, and those prices have to be set by the free market. Now, they're saying the amount of securities that the feds can buy without crushing the liquidity in the U.S. bond market is rapidly declining. And the reason is because the Fed is paying a $100,000 for a $100,000 bond issued by the U.S. government. And they're buying most of the government bonds. They're buying 80% of the bonds as they're issued by the U.S. government, according to what I've heard. That means the Fed is overpaying. They're doing this in order to maintain the illusion that the U.S. bonds have a full face value, when in fact, that's not true. That illusion is being maintained because the Fed is generously agreeing to pay essentially full face value on the bonds when the free market wouldn't do so. This is intended to maintain confidence in the public, and the people sit back and say, yay, U.S. Treasuries. But insofar as the Fed is the principal buyer, they are crushing the liquidity, in this regard. Sooner or later, the free market is going to intrude. The Fed will taper. The Fed will stop buying all the government bonds, or at least 80% of them. And when they do, they're going to put these bonds out for sale, and they're going to find out that instead of getting $100,000 for a $100,000 bond, they're going to get something like $80,000 or $70,000, and there is going to be a great debate. The government says, this is worth $100,000. And the buyers are free market and say, oh, no, it's not. It's only worth $70,000. We will lose our liquidity. The bonds will not. You can't just walk in the door and say, ha-ha, I have a $100,000 bond here and I want to sell it for $100,000. You're not going to get $100,000. So will you sell? And if you demand $100,000, will anybody pay the price? Probably not. This is what they're complaining about in part, and the article continues saying, specifically, now that the Federal Reserve has refused to taper, and they have for a while, but they'll get to it, it is absorbing over 0.3% of all of the 10-year equivalents known as high-quality collateral from private sector every week. Now, 0.3% doesn't sound like much, but over a year that translates into 16% of privately held bonds. And including that and the bonds they buy directly from the Federal Reserve, the number as of recent is now a whopping 33.18%. That's how much of the bond market that the Federal Reserve now owns, a third of the entire U.S. bond market. And this just delights me. It amuses me. It makes me smile. Because it means that when this stuff finally hits the fan, it means the Fed is going to lose a big chunk of its assets. The Fed, the manufacturer of all this fiat currency that's polluted our society and our economy, they're going to be one of the victims of the fiat currency. Right? The world's greatest counterfeit, the Federal Reserve, it's going to lose its assets. The Federal Reserve prints the fiat currency to rob the productive elements of society, is going to find itself caught in its own net and probably wind up broke. They have digged a pit and fallen into it, and I have lived to see it very nearly. Right? We are coming to a moment where people will say, oh my gosh, this is terrible. We are having an economic catastrophe. We're seeing all kinds of problems. But what will happen in the midst of that catastrophe will be a measure of justice will be dispersed upon this society. And that justice won't be confined to just the poor or just the middle class. It'll even reach up to the ranks of people like the Federal Reserve. And I'm sitting back here snapping my fingers and grinning. I can hardly wait. Huh? What else, Melody?
Yeah, but isn't the problem with that? Who bails them out is still the U.S. taxpayer and all the partners in the U.S. Fed are all the major banks. So
The taxpayers can't bail them out. They won't bail them out. We're coming to a moment again. My fundamental idea for 5 years is what can't be paid won't be paid.
I guess we can't bail out the Federal Reserve because the Federal Reserve is what's bailing out. So they'd be bailing out themselves.
Yeah, I understand that. This is like we've got rowboats. We have sinking rowboats, and I'm taking the money out of my rowboat, dumping it into your rowboat, and you're taking the money out of your rowboat and dumping it into
my rowboat. We're all sinking.
That means we're going to sink. There's going to be a sink. It's going to take place, not necessarily today, tomorrow. We don't know when it's going to happen, but we are bailing out into the next guy's rowboat. It just can't work. That's all. It's going to end. There's going to be a problem. What do we got? 6 minutes, Melody?
Yes, we do. And again, it comes back to the importance. You know, they can do what they're doing to gold, but the fundamentals for gold is the fiat currency. As long as we have a fiat currency, your purchasing power is going to decline. Period. And if you want your purchasing power to decline, then you can stay in all the paper assets and be happy with a little. Fake markups they have temporarily. This will turn around. We don't know when. I mean, I mentioned before, Al, the 2008 problem we had with the housing. We could pick a date. We pretty much knew when that was going to happen because you had all of these mortgage loans that were going to go bad. We knew the time. We knew when they were going to be readjusting the rates. We knew what the rates were. We knew people couldn't pay for these rates. These homes were being used as ATM machines. We saw this happening. We had a pretty good idea when it was going to happen. This is a little different because so much of it is based on their decisions to do certain, they have the access to printing presses. They have the ability to micromanage on a second by second basis any problems that come along the way. But ultimately, the day of reckoning will be here.
Yep. And what will precipitate the day of reckoning? It'll be a loss of public confidence in the currency. It's the only thing that holds it up right now is public confidence. And everybody admits this, including the government. It's vital to maintain public confidence. There's going to be a moment when the nation and the world finally just says we've had enough of this silliness and we're not going to play this game anymore. Well, and when that happens, the dollar becomes, it's going to be enormously devalued. We may see hyperinflation. It's conceivable. I don't know. But we see evidence of that. They're foreign countries that are trading in currencies other than dollars. Mm-hmm. They're moving away from the dollar. Dollar is now 81% of the transactions in the world, international transactions, are conducted in dollars. 15 years ago, it'd be 98%. Today, 8% or thereabouts is conducted in Chinese yuan. We talked about this yesterday, I believe. It's going to grow. And there's going to be a moment where all of a sudden the light goes on, and people say, oh, my gosh, we can't trust in paper dollars.
And, you know, we're seeing this. I mean, we've seen this with Bitcoin. Now, I don't believe Bitcoin is going to replace the U.S. dollar.
No.
But what I think is interesting is you have China that says you don't look at the Bitcoin as a currency. Who are people going to follow? China or the U.S. or the U.S. that's so deeply in debt is losing their power? We become the bullies of the world. Washington is, you know, it's not what it was. And people are going to follow China. People are going to follow Russia. They're going to listen. They're not going to follow the
China. They may not. It's not as if China
don't listen.
It's not as if China is such an admirable place.
No.
All right.
It isn't.
And it's not as if China doesn't have significant problems. But China has financial reserves. China is not the biggest debtor nation on earth. We are. China has the most financial assets of any nation on earth. We don't. And in the end, that's going to make the difference. We'll take a fiat currency from China rather than a fiat currency from the United States. Inevitably, the world will move in that direction. If China ever goes to gold, it'll stampede to China. We are going to have to stampede out of here because we're out of time, Melody.
All right.
I'm Alfred Addis, here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederson. Be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, and Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.